We are finishing off your tape with a recording of a spirit communicator who called himself the Reverend Featherstone. He came through to us on the 19th of May, 1964. Now he starts his talk off by saying, "I'm all right." And that was due because a previous communicator, just before he came through, when asked, had said, "I am all right."
I am all right.
Oh, very pleased to hear you, Brother Ben.
That sentence in itself speaks volumes.
Yes.
From the point of view of those of us who come to you, I am all right. Mm. How often there must be souls in your world who, having, as they think, lost someone near and dear to them, wonder about them, wonder if there is a life after death, wonder if, that being so, if communication is possible, and if they can return and say, "I am all right." In that one sentence, you might say, all the hopes of the world are found in regard to those who are near and dear to humanity. How often do we on this side, endeavoring as we do to make contact, see into your world souls who are anxious, concerned, whose hearts are heavy, whose lives often have become pointless and purposeless and useless as far as they are concerned, because they do not know the answer to this question, that they themselves are not able to hear someone near and dear say, "I am all right." When we look into your world and we see the state in which it is today, the chaos that exists, the uncertainties in the minds of humanity, when we see the varying degrees within man in regard to belief and non-belief, when we realize there are so many souls who have no sure anchor, who drift, as it were, listlessly through life, no point or purpose or meaning, who fear, as they so often do, that change called death. How often the call comes from hearts that are heavy laden for truth, for enlightenment, for knowledge, for assurance. There are those in your world who have some faith and who cling to that faith and yet have no knowledge, no certainty. And yet in that faith they find some comfort and to them perhaps some aspect of truth, but who nevertheless would long to have the assurance that you have. When I was on your side, I made a point, as best I could, of endeavoring to help, endeavoring to clear the minds of those who were entrusted to me, in the form, as it were, of a shepherd with his flock, endeavoring to comfort those who mourned and give courage to those where hope seemed to have become non-existent. But I found it extremely difficult nevertheless, because within myself there was an uncertainty. I had not the knowledge and the assurance that you had. You who in a sense stand outside orthodox belief in religion, the church's teaching, How strange it is that with my experience and my knowledge of doctrine, my experience and knowledge of the Bible, how little I realized, how little I knew. And yet in my own way I tried to comfort those who mourned and help those who suffered the adversities of life. But it was impossible to be able to give a concrete answer to the main problem of all, what had happened to those dear souls, once so near, so close, so part of life, who had departed. Whence had they gone? Was there a life after death? If so, was communication possible? I oft-times desired this proof that you have, but partly due to ignorance, and partly due to fear, I would not seek it outside the church. To me, though the church did not necessarily answer all questions, nevertheless, it was my anchor, and I endeavored to the best of my ability to give forth to those whose task it was for me to serve. In the church, I realize now more than ever the stumbling blocks, the difficulties, the breaking away from old ideas, deep-rooted through centuries of tradition and background. It is not easy for a man of the church to come out, as some have done recently, and proclaim something which, if not at variance from the church's teaching, certainly causes concern from the point of view that it is not in keeping with the doctrine, it is not, as it were, in the mainstream of religious teaching. And yet the more and more one thinks about it, the more one realizes and understands, the more conscious one is of the truth, underlying so much which at one time was obscure in the Bible. There were many things that used to puzzle me, things that I accepted because it was expected that one should accept them, and one did not like to doubt. One was always fighting oneself, one was always in a turmoil. One was sticking, as it were, and adhering to the church's teachings, and yet within oneself one was probing and questioning, asking, could this be accurate, could this be so? I remember when I was a man of well over 50, had been then many years in the church, that I had to come to an understanding with myself. For so long had I accepted things, almost you might say, blindly, and I wanted to seek and to search outside the church, that I was in a sense afraid. I was afraid perhaps I might be misled. I thought perhaps if communication with spirits was a possibility, that it would be obviously more easy to contact evil rather than good. I had heard about mediums, I'd heard about spiritualism, who hadn't? I remember some remarkable articles written by a Reverend Vale Owen, which were published in the Sunday newspaper, the name of which I forget, but I remember that they impressed me very much. But at the same time, I couldn't fully accept them. I thought perhaps here was the desiring, as it were, of the mind of the individual Owen for something outside the church's teachings, and yet at the same time, in a sense, confirm them. I felt this was too, perhaps, good to be true. That aroused my interest tremendously, and I started to read various books, books by Sullivan Lodge, Father Kenan Doyle, and others. And I realized after a while that all these men of intellect and obviously of sincerity could not, would not write and publish things which were not true to their way of thinking and experience. Even so, I thought there was a possibility that they could, in some instances at least, have been misled. In fact, I became so concerned, and yet in a sense afraid, and I realized that in the main there was nothing to conflict with the teachings of the Church, that is, the fundamental teachings of Christ. And I thought I would like to experience sitting, as you term it, with a medium. But just about that time I was taken very ill, and it was impossible to pursue it from the practical point of view. And during my illness, which was quite a lengthy one, I gave myself over to a great amount of reading and thinking, and I had an extraordinary experience. Of course, I suppose, some people would have said that due to my illness it was an hallucination, but I knew full well it was nothing of the kind. One early morning I woke after a very fitless, sleepless kind of night and saw at the foot of my bed my brother, who had died some few years previously. But I saw him, not as he was, in his late 40s, but as a man, as I remembered him, young, in his early 20s, struck me so vividly because every detail was there, perfect as in life, as I remembered him. He was very virile, very young. He had been a great deal attached to the open-air life, and I thought at the time how fit and well he looked. Then it suddenly came to me as I was about to speak to him that he was dead. And this so affected me that I called out his name, and he smiled and nodded, and then I was about to ask him how he had come to me, and he disappeared. This was my first contact or experience with anything what you would term of a psychic nature, but it so impressed me, so enthralled me, and I was so bewildered in a sense, and yet at the same time I was so relieved, because I knew that the illness I had was a fatal one. I knew there was no hope. It's possible, of course, that I might have been helped by doctors to have lived until longer, but I knew that somehow it couldn't be very long. And after this experience, on several occasions, I saw and spoke to various members of my family, my mother, my brother, and an aunt who had been extremely fond of me when I was a small lad, and with whom I used to stay sometimes in the country. And I remember how so well my uncle, her husband, would drive us around the country lanes in the dog cart, and how we would go to church on the Sunday, and I was dressed in my best suit, and my little sister, who was sometimes there with us on these holidays. I remember all this so well. And this aunt, who was so fond of me, came to me one night, and somehow I knew instinctively, she spoke. My time was come. When I say before she spoke, I realize now that in a sense she did not speak. It was as if there was some sort of mental communication, as if her very mind or thoughts was so vital that without any attempt or to speak in the normal way, she was able to convey her thoughts to me. It was as if there was this form of telepathy, and I knew by what she conveyed to me that I only had a very short time. And in this conversation, she was very concerned that I should realize the truth, and that I should put my affairs in order and make certain changes in my will. This perturbed me, because I thought afterwards, how can those on the other side who are so free, all their material problems and worries, concern themselves with the mundane things of earth, such as money and property? And I gave it much thought, that which she obviously had conveyed to me mentally, that I should make certain alterations in my will. I should mention at this point that I had some property, and a considerable, for those days, amount of money, which had been left to me by my mother. Actually, it had been left partly to me and partly to my brother, but on my brother's death, the rest of the money came to me. And this idea that had been imparted to me in regard to my property and money, that I should make certain alterations, did not exactly displease me, but concerned me, because I felt that the request did not seem logical or sensible, because it implied that I should leave a certain sum of money to a certain person on earth who was not really related, but who had been brought up almost as a member of the family, and whom I, quite frankly, had little or nothing whatever in common with. In fact, we were poles apart, as I thought. This person, whose name I will not mention, was in a sense a half-brother, and he was very much opposed to the church, very much an agnostic. He had no belief, no faith, and indeed was inclined to ridicule the church, and possibly because of my early interest in religious matters and because of my interest later in the church and having become a member of the church, we became less and less concerned with each other. He went his way, and I certainly went mine. I didn't see him for many years, and then once only afterwards, at a social affair to do with the family, and we barely had conversation, a few words. He'd married a very charming woman. I thought what I could make out of her, but she was no interest to me in a sense. It was just one of those things in the family. And I couldn't understand why it should be considered that he should be left any money of mine. Anyway, I pondered on this, and I called in my solicitors, and I rewrote my will, and I left him a sum of money. Sometime after my death, when I realized the possibility of communication, I returned on various occasions, and once I was taken to this brother, or half-brother, in this place which was to me completely foreign. I was taken then by this aunt, She said, I want to take you. I want to show you why I wanted you to leave this money to him. And by that time, I was so immersed in my new life that, quite frankly, I never even thought of him. I was too intrigued, too excited and thrilled and happy with my new existence to bother about mundane material things. It's true, I've been back once or twice. My own brother reported back once or twice to see members of the family. But I was never very keen on communicating with myself. And then his aunt suggested that we went to see this relation, this half-brother. I wasn't a bit excited, I wasn't a bit interested, in fact, I had no particular desire to link up at all. Anyway, she insisted, she said, I want you to see why I wanted you to leave him this money. So, we went. I say we went, I cannot even explain how we got there. All I know is that from one conscious state of being or surrounding, I found myself in another, completely, utterly different. It was, I discovered afterwards, in Africa. And it was a kind of an encampment. And many colored people, which I would have called, I suppose, in my day, savages, were congregated. And in a hut, I saw this nation, who by then was a much older man. In fact, I would have recognized him. But I became conscious of the fact that he was, although to all outward appearances he looked quite different, much older, grown a beard and moustache. And it seems that he had begun converting. I use the term converted, but he had become converted to religion. Of all the extraordinary things, this to me was the most extraordinary of all. And the money that I had left, he was using to assist these peoples. And he was, with the aid of another man who was a doctor, treating various ailments. Evidently he had studied to some extent medicine. This, of course, he had never done when I'd been on Earth. I'd never heard about him studying medicine. But he and his other man had set up a small hospital, and it was my money that had financed it. And together they were caring for these peoples. And when I say he'd become converted, I do not mean that he'd become converted in a narrow sense. His Christianity was something so completely different to the kind of Christianity, for instance, that I had taught. Of course, when I taught Christianity, there were missions that were going out, and the church, as one would expect, supported them by donations and collections and so on. But here was this man who had no faith, no belief, no time for Christianity. Through various experiences, which I discovered later, of a psychic nature, had become convinced of the teachings of Christ. He'd become converted to Christ. He'd become accepted. And he was doing the work truly of the Spirit. And I discovered afterwards that if I had left my money in the way which I'd intended, it would have been left mostly to another member of my family, who on the surface I'd always thought was an upright, clean, living sort of person. I discovered that he had become an absolute bounder, that he'd drank heavily. He was selfish, willful, had no true genuine interest in assisting or helping any human being. He was completely lacking in the rest. These signs he'd be very careful to keep from there. On the surface, he always showed an entirely different front, but underneath he was, I regret to say it, a scoundrel. And what money I would have left would have been wasted, would have been thrown down the drain, you might say. But this I speak of merely as an illustration, inasmuch that it might be of some help and some benefit to those in your world who are seeking, and perhaps help them to understand that there is so much more to communication, so much more to inquiring after the dead than perhaps so many seem to think. We do help, of course, in material things, if it is in our power to so do, if it is good to do, if it is wise to do. But at the same time, there is so much more. If the individual feels the touch of the spirit, and they are truly transformed, after all, that is what our intention and purpose is of communication, that they become new people, new souls, with a purpose and a desire to serve God and his children. Even indeed is communication with people. But if it is, as I've so often seen, linking up, communicating often with souls whose progress has been very little, who are very earthbound and very material in their outlook and thought, if it is, as it so often appears to be, on a low level, then it is pointless and purposeless. Even though it proves survival, that in itself is not enough. To prove survival and comfort those who mourn is a good and a wonderful thing. But it must be more than that. It must mean that we have changed so that we truly become desirous doing the will of the Father upon earth, that we should give ourselves truly in service and in love, and that we shall, through forgetting self, truly find ourselves. For this, I realize, is the only hope for the world, that in this, being in touch, that we are in turn so affected, so touched ourselves by the truth of the Spirit, that we should truly live by the Spirit, and in consequence, in time, all men shall know the love of God. All men shall understand Him and His purpose for humanity, and that we shall in turn eventually take away from the world the sorrows and the heartaches, and we shall place instead truth, love, and understanding, where men shall live and work together in peace and in harmony, in true realization of communication and all its implications. Then truly shall come the living Christ into the hearts of mankind. It will not be found in books. It will not necessarily be found in buildings, even though they be sanctified. For unless there is in that building truly the Spirit of Christ, and the understanding and the knowledge of Christ, and there is a revelation of the Spirit, until such time as the revelation of the Spirit enters into the hearts and minds of mankind, there can be no real hope in the world. In these things lie the future of mankind. In these truths is man's hope and salvation. At some future time, perhaps I may be allowed to come and talk to you again.
Please, friend, we would like your name. You've given such a wonderful talk.
My name probably would convey nothing, for I was nobody. I was merely an ordinary parish priest, and I do not feel that in itself is any value to you, but my name was Fenson, an unusual name. Another time I'll perhaps tell you a little more about myself, but I do not feel that is important. I do not feel that as an individual, as a person, in that sense, it matters just. It is what I or others like me may say that matters. If we can touch the hearts of humanity, if we can open our eyes to wisdom and to truth, if we can put our feet on the path of true spiritual progress, if we can break down the barriers that divide man from God, if we can indeed uplift man to the heights of spiritual acknowledgement and truth, this is our task, this is our purpose. We in ourselves matter little. My blessings to you, my dear friends. Do go forth in strength, knowing full well that truly you are led, truly you are blessed, and truly are you doing the work of the Master Jesus and all the great prophets and teachers of old who stand behind you as one great mighty band, indeed giving you all the love and the power and the strength of their command. May God indeed truly be with you, as indeed I know he is. Peace be unto you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.